Hello there, and welcome to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast, your daily look at LeBron James, Isaiah Thomas, and the rest of the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com. Joining me today is an editor at Cleveland Magazine. He's also an old college buddy of mine down at Ohio University. It's Dylan Stewart. Dylan, what's going on, man?
Hey, Chris. How's it going?
It's going good. I can't believe we'll talk over drinks and just talk about random crap. We're actually talking in a professional setting, and this is a big, I feel like this is like a big step forward in our relationship.
Yeah, you know, it feels kind of weird to not be doing this from a bar stool, but it's fun.
Yeah, so what we're here to talk about is Dylan, as I mentioned, is an editor of Cleveland Magazine. They just came out with their Most Interesting People issue, which comes out every year. Last year, J.R. Smith, if I believe, was in it. And this year, there are several Cavaliers connections. You have Kyle Korver, Savannah James, the wife of LeBron James, Jason Lloyd, the reporter for The Athletic, who you've heard on this podcast before. And then in the same issue, the January issue, Dylan did a Q&A with Zydrunas Ilgauskas, the Cavs legend, the former Cavs front office member who now does some volunteer work for St. Ignatius High School basketball. We're getting into all of that. And all those different people and just kind of different people. But Dylan, first thing, how do you go about deciding something like this? How do you decide Savannah James, Kyle Korver, Jason Lloyd? What is the decision process going into putting those specific people in this issue?
Sure. So, you know, the Most Interesting People article or package is really it's a culmination of, you know, people throughout the city who have piqued the interest of the editors. And so it really who we go for is someone who not only excels professionally or in their thing that they're known for, you know, it's someone that's really well-rounded, that has an interesting story that goes deeper than just, you know, the one dimensional side of that, professional endeavor, if you will. So, you know, throughout the years, we talk to people, you know, do unrelated interviews, meet people in the community. You know, we kind of start to compile a list every year, and then the editors come together and we pitch a big, long list that's probably double or triple of what actually ends up going into the magazine. And then together we kind of honestly fight for who we picked, make a case for who it is we picked. And, at the end of it, all the editors vote and, you know, and then we narrow the list down to 30 people.
Kyle Korver, I'm not surprised after talking to you about this, that he, is on the list. And I think people out there, I think my initial reaction was Kyle Korver is an interesting pick. So why Kyle Korver? Why out of the other personalities on this team is Kyle Korver the Cavalier on this list after you had J.R. Smith, who is a completely different, interesting person last year?
Sure. Well, you know, for me, Kyle was just someone who, you know, the three-pointer is such an interesting facet of the game, and, you know, it's really something. He just brought this special dimension to the team, I think. And so as we were putting this together, you know, he started earning that nickname, Mr. Fourth Korver, you know, and really culminating in that big 13-game winning streak in December to tie that franchise record. And so, you know, just watching him blow up and knowing that he, you know, he had all these, he's a very religious person. He's very involved in every community that he's been in. He's kind of been all over the league, but, you know, he's spent a lot of time as a rival to LeBron too. And, you know, obviously he falls really high on that 3-point, that all-time 3-point list. So, for us, he kind of just he hit all those credentials that we were really looking for, and I think that's really what made him stand out to us most.
He is his background's very interesting because he's more LA than I think people realize. He's not necessarily all like Iowa. He does have these, like, his wife is a singer, and the church things too, because I remember when he left Atlanta, it was a big thing that he left his church. When you talk to him, I mean, that's, I know, I think that's a, it's a different type of interview than you normally do, because I mean, when we're back in college, you were not, I mean, you're not, you've never really been like a quote unquote sports reporter in any way. So what, for you, what was it? Was it different interviewing an athlete who is used to just having TV cameras and reporters shoving microphones in his face? Like, was that different? Or is it, or how did you find the experience of interviewing Korver, who is, to be on the athlete scale, a pretty well-spoken guy who does give pretty good quotes generally?
Sure. Yeah. You know, he, I wasn't used to, kind of that jaded approach that I think some of the professional athletes take. And he is the nicest guy in the world. I don't mean anything by that, other than you kind of, when you interview people in the community who aren't media trained and aren't really used to this, you get a lot of people who, you know, they're nervous. They're not really sure what to say. They're, you know, do I sound okay? Type of thing. And, you know, I really didn't get that from him at first. And it really just felt like he was going through the motions, but, you know, just another interview for him. But once we really started talking about things like, his family life, but also what his favorite restaurants were downtown, and, you know, adjusting to the new city and stuff. You know, I think the fact that I am not used to interviewing athletes in this way kind of benefited me, just because, you know, I kind of approached it like any other interview. And I think so often we look at professional athletes, especially those of us who aren't around them all the time, we look at them as these, you know, superheroes, who aren't real people. And so for me to be asking these questions, you know, like his favorite restaurant and what his family life is like, you know, I think I really saw him kind of open up and start to enjoy the interview. And actually he gave me, I think I was supposed to get cut off at 20 minutes. And, you know, I think we went at least an extra 10 minutes or so, just because he was enjoying himself. So, you know, I really did. You really did get to see someone kind of open up, and it was fun to do it, to see that, and to see him, you know, kind of his interest peak a little bit when he realized that I wasn't going to ask those same beat reporter type questions.
It's 100% true, because the questions you get asked as athletes get asked by people like me who are there covering a game on a game-to-game basis is very, you know, why did you, you know, what did this specific play? And they ask you to recall a three-pointer that he hit, or what does like that mean? And it is sort of the same type of question, just on a different night. And I 100% can empathize with just the fact that you're getting asked a lot of stuff that just puts you in this two-dimensional pillar. You know, it doesn't treat you as this human that is very cultured and has lived in several states and has grown up in a way in the NBA. What did he say? His for those of them that haven't read it yet, just as a little tease, what did Korver say was his favorite place or places to eat in Cleveland?
So, you know, Korver, he just had another kid, and he actually, he kind of talked about how they don't really get out too often with three kids, believe it or not. But he said that they do spend some nights out at Flower in Moreland Hills, and they also like to hang out in at Marble Room downtown, which, if you've ever been there, is just a sight to be seen. He actually compared it to an old New York City bank or an old subway station. But yeah, I think those were the two that really had stood out to him.
Cleveland's one of those cities for NBA players that I think it has this rep outside of, for people that aren't from here or haven't played here a long time, that it doesn't have a lot, but there are like a lot of really good Russian. I think one of the times I've talked to players about it and just talked about like what Cleveland is as a city, that's always one of the things that if they are a foodie, that's one of the things they say, is that it actually is a very good community for food. Like there are just so many restaurants that it's not just Michael Simon joints. It's the places you mentioned. It's some of the other places you can find in the suburbs. It's, you know, just some of the stuff you can find just walking around downtown. Matt Moore, who used to write for CBS, got wrecked on Twitter last year because he's like complained about Cleveland as a city, and people are like, "F you!" Like, you're right, and there's just so much right around you. I mean, even just something like Barrio. I mean, freaking Dwayne Wade went to Barrio I mean, that it tells you itself. Him and Gab Uni went to bar. That's the ultimate cosign.
Right. Yeah, you don't want to get on the bad side of Cleveland Twitter, and especially you don't want to mess with Clevelanders when it comes to their food, because if we're passionate about something, it's definitely food.
The other big name, I think, person in this, and it's the one you guys have on the website right now, one of the two that I think is available right now to read for free online, is Savannah James, the wife of LeBron James. And the article's written by Lynn Thompson. It looks at her in a way that's not tied to LeBron. She has her own thing. She's not just LeBron's wife. She has all these other things going on. Before we get into just why she was the pick, and why she get, and how do you kind of settle on getting included in the process of that? You also happen to get a retweet from LeBron about this when this went out on social media. I know you weren't in the office, but what was just the reaction when you get who's by far the biggest name in Cleveland to give, like, to just put, even if it's just an RT that put some extra eyeballs on it? What is it, like, what is the reaction when you get that retweet? Cause it's not a normal everyday thing.
Oh yeah. I mean, it was huge. You know, I think we blew up quite like T Grizzly did with that that song that LeBron put on his Instagram or anything like that. But for us, I mean, it was massive. I was actually in New York City on vacation, and when I saw, I was expecting something bad when I saw a text from my boss, because my editor, because typically she wouldn't reach out to me when I was out of the office, and she was just like, oh my God, we just got a retweet from LeBron. Look at your phone. And, you know, I think the tweet had only been up for about an hour or two before he got to it and retweeted it. And I think it went from something like 10 or 15 likes and, you know, and maybe three or four retweets to, you know, our tweet blew up to over 600 retweets that day, over 2,000 likes that day. And then, you know, it was a quote tweet. So his had 25,000 likes, over 5,000 retweets. So, I mean, those type of numbers, it immediately became our most read story of the year, actually, which is insane for something that was published at the end of December. And that day I couldn't get to the top of my notifications, no matter how hard I tried, because they just kept rolling in. I truly know what it means for your phone to blow up now. And even to this day, I mean, we're getting notifications all day long from that same tweet. So it meant the world to us. It was huge. And we thought that it might, you know, we thought that it might happen, but we weren't 100% sure, and we certainly weren't expecting, you know, the response that we ended up getting.
The quote that I think stands out from the piece is, "We are just normal people from Northeast Ohio," she insists. You can look at it as a very good thing, because maybe we don't understand what we could be, but to me, that's much more stressful. It takes much more energy rather than just being yourself. And I feel like that's definitely rubbed off on our kids. That's a very, I think that speaks to a lot of what she and LeBron have done for the area. You just look at, like, you talk about the Woman of the Future thing is her big thing in the article, and you have the LeBron James Family Foundation. And it's very, I mean, it's just, what does it say that, like, there is someone in that position? Like, for you guys to have someone that isn't a politician in Cleveland, that is a very private person, there's very little out there about Savannah James in terms of what she's done. Like, there's a lot of things in this article that I learned for the first time of how involved she was, including some interesting stuff about how they met and how LeBron didn't even took her to Applebee's and didn't even, like, ask her directly for her number. It was like through a friend. Like, there's all these little nuggets in there. I mean, how, I know you didn't write the article, but to get what does it mean for you guys as a publication, and what does it say about someone that is sort of private to be able to carve out this new information about someone that has the most famous husband and is in any way, even if they weren't married, is connected to the most famous person in Cleveland?
Right. You know, it was huge. We actually so we had been trying to get Savannah James to participate in this package for 2 years prior to this, and you know, get her on the cover, and you know, and she, you're right, she, and the reason we couldn't get her is she is such a private person. I as far as I know, this is the only magazine cover she's really done. You know, and you know, it just speaks to, really, they are just people from Northeast Ohio. I mean, the innocence in that story that you told about LeBron, you know, giving her number, or giving her his number through a friend, it really speaks to that. But you know, I mean, when you see things like the I Promise makeover, that's the type of thing that could only come from, you know, a down to earth Northeast Ohio resident. You know, that's her yearly event where she, you know, helps public for girls from, you know, some of the public high schools get prom dresses, and it comes from her experience of growing up in this area, and seeing girls who couldn't go to prom because they couldn't afford a dress, you know, and even when I was in New York City, I mean, to walk down the street and I would walk past a sporting goods store or something like that, and what jersey do you see in the front? You see a Cavs jersey, and sure, it's a LeBron jersey, but it's a Cleveland jersey, and you know, from that to the huge amounts of money that LeBron donates to some of the area schools and sending kids to college, and you know, and just the impact that it's had on this city, it might not rack up to the actual dollar amounts that might have been projected, but I think there's an intangible effect that he has had and that his return has had. And that's really why 2 years ago we started trying to get her, because we saw that, you know, her being back in this area, she was really emerging as her own person with these philanthropic endeavors, and you know, and she's just, that's exactly what makes a good, most interesting person, is just this multifaceted yet down to earth and life that they're living.
I think it goes without being said that let's say they do the Jameses do leave as a family because LeBron goes to Houston or LA next summer, I think their impact of what they've done will stay steady. I think that is so clear at this point. And I think this article, which listeners can find in the show notes, they can read that there. You can check that out. Before we continue here, a reminder, you can go on iTunes right now, subscribe to this podcast, and leave a 5-star rating and review. That is the best way to support the show. We're back in 2018. Listen to some of your critiques and some of the things we can improve. Hopefully this podcast sounds a bit better. New microphones. I'm making sure there is a little less back there for you. So go on iTunes, subscribe, and leave that 5-star rating and review, and support the Locked On podcast with just a 2 minutes of your time. Dylan, the other person in most interesting people is Jason Lloyd. I having talked to him and seeing how he works, he's a character, to say the least. I think you talked to him, but what how do you settle on a journalist who would probably, like, as we're both journalists, by definition we're people that tend to not think we're very interesting. How do you settle on a journalist who may think that, and who I know it can be a tad bit gruff sometimes. How do you settle on Jason Lloyd, and what did you find interesting about interviewing him?
Sure. So, you know, you will see a lot of TV personalities and people like that in this package year after year, but very rarely will you see an editor or a writer in this package, at least a writer who hasn't written a book or something along those lines, which Lloyd had, and that was part of it. You know, his book, The Blueprint, really, it really followed those tough years. You know, Lloyd started his first day at the Akron Beacon Journal was the last day of LeBron that anyone saw LeBron in a Cavs uniform before he took off for the Heat. So, you know, he had really been there from the beginning, And that was a big part of it. But what really interested me was the things that he was doing at The Athletic. Just to be able to implement a subscription-based model and to leave something a steady job, at least in the short term, at the Akron Beacon Journal, and take this leap into something that, if it works, could be very revolutionary for the industry. I think that's what interested me the most. And you know, he had taken so much flack for poaching writers like Ari Wasserman and Zach Meisel from Cleveland.com. Really The Athletic, and they weren't, it didn't help that quote in the New York Times,
the Pappas tech bro quote of the year, in my opinion. If I had like a word for that, I think that would be it.
I might cast my vote in that direction too. But and that hurt him locally. I mean, for that stuff, to all be coupled together, it really painted him as this person who had who just wanted to take down local newspapers. And what I found was it couldn't have been further from the truth. You know, this was a guy who would, if it wasn't for his first break at a local newspaper, where he was told, "You're not our first choice, you're not our second choice, you're not our third choice, but those three turned us down. So do you want the job?" He'd be working in a factory right now. So he loves local newspapers. And I just saw this as, you know, he's delivering something to to an audience that is so passionate about their sports that I think they are willing to pay for some of the coverage, for smart analytical coverage. But also it's a model that, you know, could potentially spread to those local newspapers that, a lot of people are claiming that he was trying to take down. So, you know, I think just his proximity to LeBron, to the Cavs' entire rebuilding process, and that book that he wrote was a big part of it. But definitely all of the really interesting things that he's done at The Athletic, and really the great coverage that you're really not seeing on a local level anywhere else, that he's bringing to the city.
The Athletic, their section is, to me, it's got to be the best sports section in Cleveland. And that's not necessarily saying much, considering it's a one newspaper town and Cleveland Scene doesn't have full time sports reporters. But like, they have Zach Jackson, who is at least my favorite Browns beat reporter. They have Lloyd, who is unmatched in a lot of what he does for on the Cavs beat, and has been, and has the respect of everyone in that organization, who wrote the book that you mentioned. Wasserman, who is doing a really, really good job at Cleveland.com. And I think you're right, that it is like this. And Cleveland is like an interesting city for it, because you, on a surface level, you would think, okay, this is a quote unquote Rust Belt, even though I hate that term, a city without necessarily like a lot of high income people. This is a blue collar city. But if you look at the makeup of the city, and with LeBron, and with LeBron's being a clown car, and like the Indians being as good as they've ever been right now, with, and we'll see if that holds up, but it's really interesting that this is the time you get it like that. And Lloyd, I can't imagine them doing that, what they did, without Jason Lloyd. Cause you're not going to get, I mean, you to have someone entrenched on the beat like that, who'd been around for a long time, that knew what he was doing with the team and had been there for the bad years, to get that guy for that beat is perfect. And I, having talked to him myself, you're 100% right about the local newspaper. He doesn't want local newspapers to die. And I don't think any of us are better off if local newspapers die, but I think The Athletic being in Cleveland is in itself like I think it's a positive thing. And I don't think, I think there are certainly questions about it, but also I definitely think it's a positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. And yeah, and he definitely has a very fearless approach to his work that I think made him really well suited for that job. And I would agree. And, you know, and I think it's a simple equation. You know, you give reporters time to do the job right, and you pay them the right amount of money. And I think The Athletic is a perfect, a perfect example of, what you see when you do that.
What were some of the, was there anything you left on the cutting room floor with Lloyd, or just, or if there was anything notable, what did you find especially interesting about talking to him other than the stuff about The Athletic?
Sure. Well, there are a few things, you know, just in regards to sports, you know, to find that basketball is probably, if not his least favorite, definitely his second favorite sport. He's a huge baseball guy. Mm-hmm. And actually, he told me that the only time he's been starstruck, you know, being around athletes was when he bumped into Cal Ripken Jr. for the first time, which is just such an obscure person to be starstruck from when you've met Michael Jordan. But, you know, so I found that really interesting. I also found, you know, just kind of the disconnect that a lot of beat reporters approach their jobs with, you know, the fact that, you know, he wants these people because of how often he's seeing them and how close he's gotten with them as regular people to succeed, but he is not a fanboy in any way, shape, or form. You know, he really approaches his job with that journalistic integrity. And that's what he told me he loves so much about not having to cover baseball, is, you know, covering Jim Tressel and knowing what he knew but couldn't report years before all of that came out made him kind of fall out of love with Ohio State. You know, spending however many days a year with the Cavs kind of made him lose his fandom for the Cavs. We didn't get into the Browns because, you
that's
know.
No one needs that in their life.
No one needs that. But the Indians are still that team that he kind of holds up as and still approaches with that childhood fandom. So, you know, just that in the wild schedule that, you know, an NBA beat reporter has to live, especially, you know, when you have kids and you're missing birthdays and stuff like that, you know, a lot of the insight into just kind of the nitty gritty of the job, I found really interesting, though it didn't fit into the story.
Yeah, when I that inside baseball stuff is always some of my favorite things to talk to journalists about. And when I talked to him, he talked about how he doesn't really take notes because everything's on tape. And that, as someone who's a chronic, probably overdoes it with reporters' notebooks, that stressed me out too. To no end hearing and say, yeah. That stressed me out. The last person you talked to, and you specifically talked to Z, you had 10 questions with the Jordan Solgauskas, who is, I don't know if this already happened, but he honored by or I think it's in January, he's going to be honored by the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission. He's the real Z. Ante Zizic is not Big Z. I know he's your I know you're a fan because he's a Croat, but
he's my Croatian brother.
Yeah, I cannot stand by people calling him Big Z because Zdrudas Ogaskis is the one and only. But what did Z seem like to you? He's not working for the Cavs anymore. He's just kind of living his life, still lives in the area. What was Z like to talk to?
You know, Z, he was interesting to talk to, it goes back to some of those themes that we were discussing with the Savannah James piece, is while, you know, he's born and raised in Lithuania, he's a Clevelander, man. I mean, he really, truly is. He loves the city. He kind of, talking to him, even though there's a little bit of an accent there, he just, you get the same, like, down-to-earth feel that you get from a lot of the locals here. And it's funny, you know, we were joking about you know, that with Lithuania upbringing a little bit, you know, compared to my Croatian brother there, you know, he has a similar background, in the sense that you know, he came here and he really found a home here in Cleveland that was really reminiscent of the one that he had in Lithuania. In the Q&A, we talk a little bit about him kind of finding solace during some hard times in the Lithuanian community center on East 185th, the Lithuanian American Citizens Club. But he would go there even when his parents would come into town. He'd eat Lithuanian food and speak to people in Lithuanian. But but he also talked about how like the city that he grew up in was so similar to Cleveland in be it weather or just the blue collared nature of the city. I don't think people really realize the struggles that he dealt with early in his career, especially, I mean, someone like me who was, early in his, I don't remember I was too young to really remember the very early parts of his career. But he told me that he nearly retired when he was 25 years old. At some point he had more, ankle and foot surgeries than games played. There were even stories about him wobbling around on crutches outside of Reserve Square downtown. This big, lanky 7-footer struggling with crutches, walking around the city, and people. So he's hard to miss, and people would come by and offer him words of support. And all these years later, now that things really worked out in his favor, even if they didn't seem like they were going to at the time, he remembers all those people in the city who stuck by him. He remembers the Lithuanian community that, that offered him a home away from home when he was not able to travel with the team, when he was not able to, when he was not playing in the game. So, so much of his career in the later part of his career was interesting to me, but those early days before, the 2007, getting to the finals with LeBron and stuff like that, those are the great times that we all remember, but those early days are really what stood out to me and what I found really interesting.
Speaking of 07, he had the understatement of the year and saying LeBron played really great. That was the series LeBron just took over. What's really interesting to me is that he's not completely out of basketball. He's not working for the Cavs anymore. He was in the front office for a little bit. He said he wanted to be more with his family and stuff, but he just seems very happy doing other stuff, but he's still working with St. Ignatius, just helping out there. I don't know if you talked to him about this in detail, but like, do you know how he ended up at St. Ignatius, considering all the other, I mean, there's a ton of Catholic high schools, a ton of good basketball programs in the city, but how does he end up at St. Ignatius? Do you have an idea about how that happened?
Not precisely. I think it was just kind of through, various connections. I do have insight in the sense that, kind of like we talked about with Lloyd, you just miss it. The season falls during the same time every single year. And you just start missing those same birthdays year after year and holidays and things like that. And, you don't fall out of love with basketball, but you fall out of love with the lifestyle. And so what he said to me was that this was just he found this opportunity to stay involved with basketball, to be involved with basketball in a different way, but also in a way that, worked on his own schedule, where he was able to be, my words, not his, but be a little bit selfish with his time and give that time back to his family, who had really, been flexible, like every NBA family is, had been flexible with him as he played such a long storied career and then went straight into the front office.
Yeah, he's such an interesting guy because he's very quiet. He's not particularly boisterous guy by any means, and I think the Q&A captures that very well, just how understated he talks about things, and he's just kind of, I think, happy to be doing this and still be connected to the city. And I mean, even when he got his jersey retired, there's like, you asked a question about that, but that was I don't know if he's even aware of this, you know, to what extent he would acknowledge it, but like, there was also a way to get LeBron back into the city to recruit him, you know. And it's just like, he was just like yeah, I got my jersey retired, and that's like more of itself. But even though he was part of this, you know, recruiting ploy for LeBron, which, to go back to Jason Lloyd, Lloyd writes about in his book, and McMenamin and Brian Windhorst wrote about it in their book as well. But the issue is the most interesting people issue. It is the January issue of Cleveland Magazine. That's correct. It's a January issue, right? I didn't just butcher that.
No, but it's a January issue, and it's on newsstands now. Yeah, pick one up, get a subscription, read it online, retweet it, all of the above.
Yeah, you can go right now. You can get it at, if you go to Giant Eagle or Heinen's, you can find it there. You can subscribe right now online. You can read, I will link to the Zydrunas Ilgauskas Q&A and the article on Savannah James down in the show notes below if you want to check out those. Then you subscribe right on the website if you're there, and check out everything else the good folks at Cleveland Magazine are doing. But Dylan Stewart, you can find him, I don't know his Twitter handle off the top of my head, so he can tell him that, but you can find him at Cleveland Magazine every month, and you can check out his writing there. Dylan, just tell people where to find you on Twitter, and thanks again for coming on.
You can find me at Dill Stew. That's D-I-L-L-S-T-E-W. And you can find my bylines at clevelandmagazine.com. And Chris, I appreciate you having me on. Let's talk soon, and let's pick up a six pack of some Jackie O's beers, and let's watch a Cavs
game. Yeah, we'll go to the parade, the 0-16 parade, and get some Mystic Mama and enjoy the cold while drinking colder Athens, Ohio beer. But this has been Locked On Cavs. Find us on Twitter at Locked On Cavs. Please go to iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and review. And we'll be back. I'm going to record a Facebook Live Q&A at 11 a.m. So you can hop on Fearless Sword's Facebook page then, do that, and submit your questions there. And we'll be back with a recap of Cavs Magic on Sunday morning to help you get through the rest of your weekend. But for myself, for Dylan Stewart, it's been Locked On Cavs. Have a great rest of your Friday.